Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the 100th episode spectacular of Cinematic Universe, the podcast that's all about comic book movies, which you can find at cinematicmultiverse.com. I'm Joe Cunningham, and joining me to help make sense of the comics behind the movies are...
Sir Patrick.
And Reese Williamson.
And Sir James, unfortunately, isn't here with us this weekend, but we are actually all together in person, which is a very rare thing for Cinematic Universe.
Is it Reese... the first time we've ever done that? Apart from like when we did our Batman v Superman pizza.
Yes, it's very rare. We are normally Skyping between each other, and the three of us are in the same room because we have been at the Thought Bubble convention in Leeds, my home city of Leeds, this weekend. We've been kind of making our way around the convention all weekend. We've been speaking to some of our friends, some of our listeners, some of the people we admire the most, and Reese, who's also here. And we've got some fun little bits and pieces from that we've recorded, which are going to be interspersed throughout the podcast today. So you can look forward to those. But we also thought we'd use this 100th episode, because this is our 100th episode between our main episodes, our minis, our bonuses. We've got to 100, which is really exciting. And we thought we'd kind of try and take a little bit of a step back. And at this point, I'm going to hand over the hosting reins and kind of become... the interviewee, because
you're the expert on what Joe thinks of comics.
Yeah, so you're now going to grill me on my throughout these first 100 episodes, and really closing on 2 years now, my foray into the world of comics. So Reese, Seb, take it away. You are now the hosts.
Oh God, such a power! Because I think a lot of listeners. Maybe you haven't been listening since the beginning, actually will realise that you were not a comics reader really at all before.
No, I read Simpsons comics as a kid, mm-hmm. and bits of the Beano. Mm-hmm.
We talked about comics a little bit more recently than that.
Yeah.
And you dip in and out, but nothing like this education that you've had these last couple of
years. I'd read like Watchmen and a few other things, and even like, I think I read Superior Spider-Man just before the podcast started, but that was kind of at the point where my interest in comics was starting to peak. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that I went to Seb and James in the first place and said, hey, I've got this idea for a podcast, what do you think, you guys? And then they bashed it into something that would be vaguely listenable.
Is it? When's that happening?
I hope so.
We're still bashing. So I guess to start with, I mean, how do you... Certainly, I would guess you see yourself now as a comics reader.
Kind of. Well,
Does this mean we have to not have you as the host anymore? If you're a comics reader.
Well, I do now. There is a comic shop in Leeds, OK Comics, that I go to. Like, I have subscriptions to certain comics.
Mm. That's probably a good place to start, because I think, obviously, you talk on the podcast about the comics that we get you to read as recommendations, but you've also started reading things that we haven't recommended. So twin question, what are you reading regularly that has nothing to do with the podcast, and what has been what's stood out the most of a comic that you've gone and read off your own back that's nothing to do with the podcast?
Well, I think the first one that I read that you didn't recommend directly on the podcast that was amazing was Alias, but you kind of had talked around that so much on the podcast.
I think we did end up working it in as a recommendation, just to give an excuse to talk about it really at some point.
I definitely did talk about it on the pod. I think, well, so basically my approach was last year when Marvel was doing its Secret Wars stuff and it was rebooting the whole universe, that seemed to me a good point to kind of jump on and try some Marvel comics. So I bought a whole load of issue ones, and there's a lot that I got no further than an issue with. There's a lot that I maybe got through the first arc and went, okay, that was fine, but it wasn't for me. And there are some that I'm still reading now. So, I mean, probably the best one was Vision, which I've talked about on the podcast before, that I've hugely enjoyed. I'm still reading Doctor Strange from that point last year. I really enjoyed Mockingbird. And there'll be a bunch of stuff that I'm forgetting. But then I also use that kind of opportunity to pick up something like Paper Girls when I'm in the comic shop, which I read with my wife. In fact, I read them aloud to her, as I do with some other comics. And so, like, Paper Girls was also a gateway into picking up volumes of Saga and reading Saga with her. So,
and we had a discussion the other night in which we learned what some of your Saga character voices are.
Yes, yeah, so I read, like, so Saga is, because I read Alias and then read it again with Laura, but read it out loud. And Saga is one that has lots of characters, so it's really fun to be like, oh, I'm Goose, I'm the little seal man, and I don't know whether he's supposed to talk like this, but he does when he's with Frendo. So it's a little bit like that.
I think that's a whole spin-off podcast.
I think it is.
Joe reads comics aloud. I mean, it's a lot more difficult when, like, I'm reading Paper Girls and the four main characters are all like four, like, 12-year-old girls, and I... my voice, especially this weekend after some alcohol has got into my vocal cords. Yes, it would.
I'm the 12-year-old girl.
Yes, I'm Erin.
Okay, so before we go any further, we will have some more questions and discussions for you, Joe. But let's bring in one or two of the segments that we went and recorded at Thought Bubble this last weekend. So yeah, we found some friends of ours and some people who we like and some people who like us and listen to the podcast as well. And we sort of got them to play along with some segments from the podcast. So dotted throughout, you'll hear some pitches for comic book movies or TV shows, some recommended comics for Joe to go and read. Explaining a comic book concept that Joe doesn't understand. We've got a bit of a doozy there, and just some general talking as well about comic book movies that people love. So we're going to play in the first one or two of those now, depending on what happens in the edit. I don't know if it's going to be one or two, but then later on you'll hear when they pop up, you'll hear them. But now you know what they are. So let's hand off and take a little break now, and then we'll come back and talk to Joe some more about comics.
I'm Al Kennedy. I'm a podcaster. I appear on the podcast House to Astonish, which you can get at housetoastonish.com. I've also appeared on this very show before as the extra chair on the Scott Pilgrim episode, which was terrific fun.
So if you're a new listener to Cinematic Universe, within the past year probably, you haven't heard Al. But no. You should go back and listen to that episode, because it was a very good one.
I enjoyed it a lot. And it's a good film as well. It gives you a chance, an excuse, to rewatch Scott Pilgrim vs. the World.
But also, today we are going to get you to explain a comic book concept that, as a movie fan, I just don't understand.
There wasn't a lot of... You didn't really play up the... We have fans who like it when you go... Oh, I expected that you were going to do that for this convention.
Do like a face as well. You don't get to see the face, listeners. But yeah, so Al is going to explain a comics concept that, as a movie fan, I just don't understand. I modulated that a lot. And Al, I want you to explain to me Transformers comics. Like, why, what, and should I ever read any? Because I don't like Transformers, but I've heard things that pique my interest.
Yeah, the Transformers as a sort of media entity obviously come from Toyline to begin with in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. And there's been a Transformers comic for pretty much almost as long as there's been Transformers toys. The Transformers, most of the major ones, were actually named by the writer of Marvel's Transformers comic. Bob Budiamski, who was the original writer of Transformers, sat around and came up with the names of Optimus Prime and Megatron and Jazz and Bumblebee and all these kinds of characters.
So do they predate the animated show?
They were all around the same time. 1984 was when the whole kind of shebang debuted at once. It was launched as a four-issue limited series, and the first four issues said on them, Well, in fact, first 3 issues said I'm on number one of a 4-issue limited series, number two of a new 4-issue limited series, and number three of a 4-issue limited series. By number four, they'd taken that off, and by number five, it had become ridiculous. The final issue, published in 1991, I think, bore the slogan at the top of the page, number 80 in a 4-issue limited series. And the comics themselves ran in the States for, you know, 7 years or something like that, which is actually a really long time for a licensed toy comic to run for, because normally these toys would come into favour, live out their lives in the minds of children, and then be replaced by something else. That just didn't happen with the Transformers. It just kept going and going and going. In the UK, a chap called Simon Furman was kind of drafted in to write additional stories that slotted in between the American ones, because the American comic was monthly and the British comic was weekly, so they were perennially catching up with the American comic that they were reprinting. And what that meant was Furman Furman started to develop these incredibly intricate storylines that wove in and out of Bob Budiansky's American storylines, to the extent that when Budiansky left the American comic, it was Furman who they actually got in to take over writing the US version. And by the end of it, it had become this kind of galactic spanning melodramatic religious war space opera for children. And in that capacity, if you read it, even those old comics from the 90s now, they still hold up and they're still pretty good.
And even with zero interest in Transformers as a concept?
If you're no interest in Transformers as a concept, I wouldn't go back to those Simon Furman comics. But there have been other Transformers comics over the years. The most recent iteration is published by IDW, who also do a bunch of other licensed comics. They do things like G.I. Joe, and the Micronauts and Mask.
They've got Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters.
Back in the Future. Yeah.
My Little Pony. Gem and the Holograms. Yeah. All sorts of things. And they launched two series about 4.5 years ago. One called More Than Meets the Eye and one called Robots in Disguise. And More Than Meets the Eye is probably, if it's not the very best comic that's currently being published in the States, it's probably in the top two. It is simultaneously very much about the fact that it's the Transformers, because a lot of the storylines come out of things like the concept that there would be a caste system essentially on Cybertron, whereby if you turned into something that was for manual labour, if you turned into a dump truck, then you go off and be a manual labourer. If you turned into a beautiful huge fighter jet, you might get to be somebody who was a politician or something. If you turned into something useless, then you were pretty much just cast out and had to do crap jobs. Okay. So there's all sorts of kind of complex political stuff gets brought into it. Stuff that you would not at all expect to form part of a comic based on licensed toy robots. And at the same time, you've got lots of storylines which are nothing to do with the fact that they're Transformers, that are just to do with normal character relations. Like, there's one of the most touching romances in the whole of comics is in,
and it's between two Transformers.
It's between two male-identifying Transformers. Yeah. And it is beautiful. There is a scene in one issue, which I will not spoil.
And I know the scene you're
genuinely talking about. I have never been brought to tears by a freaking Transformers comic, except by this scene. It is heart-rendingly beautiful. And
so nothing like the Michael Bay movies where you're going to get, like,
no,
swinging wrecking ball testicles.
There's no bit where a robot pees on a house. There's no bit where a robot stamps on somebody's car and goes, "My bad." None of that stuff.
We don't linger on any human bottoms or anything like that.
No.
But there are a lot of Red Dwarf references.
There are lots of Red Dwarf
references. Oh, amazing. Well, I'm on board for that.
I mean, it's a sci-fi comedy, and it's cut from that same... It's a sci-fi character-driven comedy that's cut from the same cloth as a Red Dwarf or a Hitchhiker's or...
Yeah, the basic concept of it is that in the aftermath of the Transformers War finishing, which has been now the case in the Transformers comics for the past 4 years, the Autobots and Decepticons are no longer at war, a group of Transformers goes off into space to try to find a group called the Knights of Cybertron, who were like kind of legendary characters from their past.
And it turned up in a Michael Bay movie.
And, And,
I understand that reference.
The group which goes on this ship is the most dysfunctional group of weirdos. It's basically a lunatics have taken over the asylum kind of story, and every single character in it is in some way emotionally or mentally aberrant.
My favourite character is, and I'm terrible with the names because it is a really difficult comic to keep up with the names of characters, and that's not the fault of the writers or anything, it's a fault of the format. It's Transformers, they're all robots. The one who is who was a really big villain Decepticon, and who's kind of a bit slightly fundamentalist, religion-y, purple guy.
Megatron?
No.
Oh, Tarn.
No, because I haven't got as far as Megatron being in it yet. Although I know he is.
Cyclonus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a great, fascinating character. The whole point is, he was a Decepticon, and he still believes in that, but equally, he's not... you're not reading it thinking he's secretly a villain. You know that he is on their side.
He's got a strong moral code, which is not in alignment with their strong moral code. And he's basically a kind of a samurai, essentially, as well.
And I find that... And his relationship with...
Tailgate.
Again, yes.
Who is a little bomb disposal robot, or so at least it is, you're led to believe at the outset, who is the most adorable little sad sack character. Yeah. And the two of them develop a relationship which is, again, if it's not quite a romantic relationship, it is certainly a complete a relationship of complete devotion.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. So this has been not only explaining Transformers to me, but kind of a comic book recommendation as well.
Yeah, basically.
Sam James needs to find a way to...
Yeah, you can shoehorn in the first volume of Transformers More Than Meets the Eye. Yeah. More Than Meets the Eye has actually just been cancelled, but is being relaunched in December.
Ooh.
Under a new name, which is Transformers Lost Light. So issue one of Lost Light will be out in December.
Okay,
and
fantastic.
It's going to be a good jumping on point for new readers.
Will it not spoil significant amounts of plot from...
Yeah, definitely. But if you want to start reading this comic, then you have to start somewhere.
Okay, well, Al, thank you very much for coming on and explaining a concept. And, well, really, and I apologise to this in advance, but you've told me that there's more to Transformers than meets the eye. Good night.
I'm Harry. I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener. And I do various bits and pieces in and around London.
Harry's basically the only person who responded when we said, hey, listeners, if you're at Thought Bubble and you want to meet up and do a little bit on the podcast, then get in touch.
Superfan Harry, who spotted Seb and was like, hey, it's Seb Patrick of Cinematic Universe fame.
Yes, I'm going to be clinging on to that one for a good while.
Ego suitably stroked. Yeah. But nothing else, not a crazy superfan, just a...
I hope not.
Okay, so we're now in the part of our podcast where we would normally talk about comic book movies. So Harry, we thought we'd ask you just to tell us a little bit about your favourite comic book movie.
All right, my favourite comic book movie is Thor 2: The Dark World.
Wow. Okay, we might have to sit down. We might be here a little while you explain that.
No, but I'll be honest. Please, someone says reasoning. Like Guardians of the Galaxy, Scott Pilgrim. I'm like, okay, I get it. I've heard the reasons why before. No one has ever said that, so I'm very much intrigued to hear what you're going to say about Thor 2.
Well, obviously, the Thor movies are the best MCU movies.
I mean, if by Thor you mean Captain America, then yes, they are. Yes.
I mean, yeah, I know, I'll grant you. No, I mean, Captain America, the movies are the better movies, objectively. But the Thor movies are the ones that sort of most commit to that to that world. And Thor 2: The Dark World is not a good movie, but it is my favourite because it's so... like commits to being dumb and like has great relationships in it, and it's funny.
Commits to being dumb. I like that argument.
But how do you defend the tube scene? Because as a Londoner yourself, that must be troubling to you.
Now, all right. So he gets on the Jubilee line.
Yes.
And she says what? Three stops.
She says three stops to Greenwich.
And where
from
is
Charing Cross?
Yeah.
I've tried. You can't make it work.
It'd be North Greenwich, and even from North Greenwich Station, it's a bit of a
North,
walk.
North Greenwich is not Greenwich.
Side of
the Jubilee line doesn't go to the bit of Greenwich that they're then in. You need the DLR, or you need to walk from Canary Wharf
so
through the tunnel.
Theoretically, he could get off the tube and get on the water taxi.
You're saying he goes from Charing Cross to Embankment or down to Waterloo, maybe?
Yeah,
and
so
then,
he goes to Waterloo.
Gets on the Thames Clipper.
Thames Clipper.
Yeah.
Which I think is... All right, it's more than two stops. But it's not that much more.
Here would be my advice for him. Take it just the one stop that you need because you're stuck on a tube. Get off and then Mjolnir the rest of the way. That would.
But he doesn't have the hammer.
Oh, he doesn't have Mjolnir.
That's the point. That's
even when he gets off of those stops, he is going to have to do all that messing around afterwards.
I mean, the one thing we can say about Chris Hemsworth is he does look like he does a lot of exercise.
Yes.
So he probably could run that.
And again, you did base this argument on this movie commits to being dumb. So this really does fit into that idea.
It's got the best bad guy in the MCU.
Okay,
talking about Loki and not Malekith.
Okay. Poor Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah.
But you know what? I like any movie that has Christopher Eccleston in it because it means Christopher Eccleston is getting paid. And, you know, I think we all can support that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm always keen to see more Christopher Eccleston, even if it is buried beneath 6 inches of latex mask.
And dialogue that almost entirely has to be translated in subtitles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, I can't say I understand, but...
But it's a reasonably compelling case. Wait, so hang on, what was the argument? It was commits to being dumb.
I think, you know, when you go to see a superhero movie, there are obviously ones you watch when you want to, like, see a really good movie. And there are ones that you watch when you're like, you know what, I just want to watch... It's like reading a dumb comic book, you know, or like a good dumb comic book.
And it's right, there's a vast world of difference between favourite and best.
Yes.
Yeah,
because I have favourite movies that I probably couldn't say in any way were good, so yeah.
I mean, Howard the Duck is a...
Howard the Duck is a bit of a favourite, yeah. As apparently you're going to find out at the end of the podcast, because Seb did some sneaky recording. Well, Harry, thank you very much, and thanks for recognising us. It was
gratifying.
Yeah, we've had some good times this weekend, and we have a mutual friend.
Yes,
Simon Renshaw, mean nothing to listeners, but
he hasn't been on the podcast yet. He should have been on the podcast at some point.
Yeah, you've made it on the podcast for Simon.
Yeah, that's great.
I'll lure it over.
Tell him that next week. Yeah.
A lot of people, me included, I'd include Seb in this, read comics as adults because we read them as kids, basically. Mm. Maybe we would have come to them regardless, but I do think that I pick up comics now, especially characters I know, superhero, you know, Marvel, DC stuff, because of that connection, really, to my childhood. You don't have that.
No.
I'm sort of wondering, what is it that you are getting from these comics, really? Is it, and you know, it's, I think there are a few things it could be. Is it the actual way a comic is constructed that's different to other, you know, mediums? Is it the, you know, especially the more superhero stuff, is it reading new stories of these characters that you know a bit? Will it be slightly the culture of comics that is a new thing to you? Is there a novelty to it all? What is it that you like about comics?
Why have I stuck around with comics, basically? Yeah. Why do I not just read the recommendations that Seb and James give me and then stop?
Because you've got a lot of interest in your life. You know, movies, you've got a PS4 in the other room. You've got a lot going on.
Sports. American sports.
Yeah?
Yes.
You're married now. There'll be a family in your future, I imagine. But you're reading comics still. You're reading more comics. Why?
To go back to the very start of your question, which was the... you know, you guys reading them when you were younger and that's why you still read them now. So for me, I didn't read comics when I was younger, but superhero movies were a thing throughout all of my teenage years. Like I say, Spider-Man came out when I was like 12 years old.
And that was... Don't remind us.
That was a movie that I then owned on DVD and watched time and time again.
I was 20.
But then, yeah, and also superhero cartoons. So I don't remember them all vividly and I don't remember being addicted to them, but I did... You know, I did watch Spider-Man and Batman and X-Men, and I think I always felt that, like, superheroes particularly was a thing that I wanted to know more about as a kid. And so I always felt a little bit of a disconnect because I didn't. And personality-wise, I'm someone who kind of, it's very difficult. Comics was always a difficult thing for me to get into because I've got a very completist nature. I'm like, why would I not just go and read the first issue of Wolverine and then read every comic that he appears in since then? And what do you mean there's different writers with different takes on the character? Yeah. So there was a little bit of a stumbling block there.
in terms of getting into them as a kid, with the idea that you that it's really difficult to have a holistic approach to comics fandom, and that you just have to find
it's
the areas
kind of impossible. And I kind of
build your own canon.
I, by getting the recommendations from you and James, I have relinquished control over that. So when you tell me, don't read the first volume of Phonogram, just read the second one, I twitch a little bit.
I never said don't read the first volume, but I just said read the second one first. Let me be clear, that was the recommendation.
But if, like, I probably, if it was me and I'd heard that the first volume of Phonogram wasn't as good as the second one, I might never have read any of them.
But so if people say to you with a TV show, oh, the first season's not that good, or the first few episodes aren't that good, do you stick with them anyway? Do you just make allowances? Or do you give up if the first few are crap? Do you not allow yourself to get into a show if the first season is crap?
It's the other way around. Once I'm in on something, I'm in on something. For instance, I've never watched 24 because people are like, oh, season 4. I don't know which seasons, by the way, if people are like, season 4 is not the crap one. There are seasons of 24 which have lesser reputations, and even though people are like, oh, certain seasons are amazing, I know if I start 24, I'm going to watch every single episode, and I'm not willing to do that. But yeah, so that was a bit of a stumbling block with comics. But I think what I to the second half of your question, like what I get out of them now and what I'm reading, why I'm still reading them, the superhero ones particularly, and this comes to a lot of the podcast, is literally it's driven by making sense of the comics behind the movies, because I want to, like, I'm invested in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The DC movies haven't hooked me yet, but I like the idea of Batman movies and Justice League movies, and I want to know more about the Flash and Wonder Woman and Supergirl, and I want to, who are their biggest villains and what are their best stories and what potentially is, you know, Planet Hulk going to be showing up in Thor Ragnarok. I know that Meek is a character from Planet Hulk who's going to be in Thor Ragnarok now, because that was something that I read, and that was really fun to me. So with the superhero stuff, it's just general, like, nerdiness. I want to know more about all of these big universes that have been put down on the page. And the fact that then you can be picking up these comics that, you know, I don't think we'll ever see anything like Vision, but it's just a really, really well-told story within that. And there are a lot of comics that are very good. And then also, I guess, enjoying, like, Brian K. Vaughan comics, as I have, probably, you know, you don't have to have read comics as a kid. They are comics that you can enjoy as an adult, just within their own right, as good stories.
I'm Chris Hewitt, and I'm associate editor at Empire Magazine, and I host the Empire podcast, and I do as little as possible, and hope to get away with it.
In fact, I would imagine if anyone listens to our podcast, they probably already listen to the Empire podcast.
I'd say there's an overlap, definitely.
So we're going to do a little pitch segment.
All right.
Like we do on the podcast normally. So the pitch that we want you to give us, Chris, is, if you could pick any comic book that has not yet been adapted to the screen that you'd like to see a movie of,
right,
what would it be and why?
Okay.
And how would it be adapted?
And how would it be adapted to? All right. Comedy answer.
Yeah,
with
sure.
Air quotes. Is Roy the Rovers. That would be amazing.
That would be my serious answer.
Maybe it is my serious answer. Yeah. Who knows? But within that, because within that you have obviously the potential for lots of spin-offs in the MRCU, the Melchester Rovers Cinematic Universe.
I'm liking the way this is going.
Right? Yeah. So you got Hot Sean Hamish.
Yeah.
You got Mighty Mouse. Oh, right away you got those.
Yeah.
And the fact is, Roy Race's career over the years that the comic was going was just batshit insane. I mean, just mental. The guy lost, did he lose his leg? He lost his foot?
He lost his when they ended the original run, he had a helicopter crash and lost his foot. So he became the manager, and his son was the new one.
Okay. There was
half
a bus
the team
crash.
Got blown up in a bus crash by terrorists in the 1980s.
I mean,
half the team got killed off.
That's
it was like
not
Dream
good.
Team.
That's
Dream
not
Team
good.
Had nothing on Roy.
I'd save that for the sequel.
They got kicked every summer. They would go and play a charity match or a, you know, like a friendly in a foreign country in the summer, and they'd get kidnapped. There was just so much kidnapped, especially like in the early ones.
I mean, the insurance in Roy Race alone must have been through the roof. But it's extraordinary, and his goal record alone. There hasn't been a great football movie. I still believe that. I still believe there hasn't been a great football movie.
You know, I'm a fan of Mike Bassett. I really like Mike Bassett.
That's tangentially a football movie.
Yeah. There's only one Jimmy Grimble.
Sorry, I signed correct.
Yes, okay.
There's only been one great football movie. Oh, wait, Saturday comes. There's been two great films. Okay, it's all gone to pot.
Do you have casting suggestions for Roy?
Okay, so it has to be. It can't be someone in his... He always struck me as someone who was in his 50s.
Okay.
That's a weird thing. Even in the comic book, because he was always meant to be a kind of veteran.
Yeah, even as a 20-odd year old, he had the personality of like Bobby Charlton or, you know,
As much as, say, the Marvel and DC books take liberties with time frames, I mean, Roy the Rovers just felt like... It seemed to be like a new season every week. And he was like 75 or something by the end of it.
If you tot it up, his playing career is about 40 years long.
Yeah, pretty much.
And that's why then when they did the stuff in the 90s, they did the monthly comic, where and they had to revise it, so they actually had it that there were that there was Roy Race Senior, and then that the Roy Race that everyone loved in the 70s was the second Roy Race, and he'd only started his career in like...
That's what they did with Dennis the Menace as well.
It was amazing.
Dennis the Menace is a legacy hero, Dennis the Menace's dad now is the 80s Dennis.
So do you think we go with a former footballer then, rather than a... So someone whose career is maybe...
Don't say David Beckham.
Well, I was thinking actually the Charlton brothers, we get them in dual roles. And
the Charlton brothers? Joe, are you insane?
I would say Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy for
Roy
Race.
That's pretty damn good.
Okay.
That is very, very good indeed. I'm trying to think of someone who's young enough, blonde enough, athletic enough, British enough. I don't think you want to parachute them. This is a British icon. You want to stay away from it. And you want to, you know... I don't know, who could really play? Tom Hardy's a very, very good choice.
But now you've said blonde, British, athletic, I'm thinking Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah, but...
I suggested him for Captain Britain as well.
I feel that after Green Street, he should stay away.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, football. Anything that requires an accent or acting. It's a bit harsh, you know, because he's redeemed himself for Green Street. I don't know if you've seen, there's this YouTube compilation of his best Cockney accent moments from Green Street. It's just, you need to check it out. It's absolutely amazing. Charlie Hunnam, no, I don't feel so.
He is young.
No,
and
he's dreadful.
I mean, he's he is, but I thought we were on that route.
No. Well, I want someone good. Joe, this isn't a joke movie. This is
serious. It's become serious.
Jack O'Connell.
Yeah. That's good.
Toby Kebbell. I know he's not blonde, but he's versatile. He could dye his hair.
He could mocap it. He's becoming a bit of a mocap guy. Yeah,
you know, it's got to be someone who could convince physically. But then I just feel you get Roy Race established. You can do Hotshot Hamish with a really tempestuous Scott. You can get, you know, like I say, Mighty Mouse. Wasn't there one? There was a goalkeeper called Rick Stewart.
So you had Gordon Stewart, the safest hand in soccer. He died in a plane crash, and then his son Rick was a goalkeeper.
Absolutely.
See, I thought you see. Maybe yours was slightly before my time because there was in the early 90s there was Goalmouth, who was a rapping goalkeeper.
He
played for like a third division club and he did rap.
Oh my
word! That was like Rick Stewart was kind of, he was a bit of a goody goody. He was a sort of clean cut, bit boring, but.
But you get those guys in the team together. It's just astonishing.
I like and it. We've got a whole cinematic universe.
The Mel Shuster universe.
I've got kind of like
Billy's Boots. Get the whole thing coming together. Yeah.
Billy's Boots in its own right would be a great movie.
Yeah,
completely.
It would be.
Okay, well, I'm on board with this. I say we greenlight a 10-year plan.
My serious answer, and I know it's been adapted in some form, but as a movie, is Fables. But I'm on board now. I've convinced myself that my comedy answer is actually the thing I want to say.
Yeah, it was the best one.
I would like to just very quickly ask you a bonus question as well.
Yep.
Because obviously, with the knowledge and insight that you will have into upcoming movies, the single one...
Give us a spoiler.
...coming up that you're most excited for. Comic book movie? Yeah. Any movie based on a comic book that is in production, that is going to be released, that you are the most excited about. So don't say Gambit, because our official line on the podcast is that that's never going to happen.
It does feel that way, doesn't it? Yeah. It really does. I'm not going to cop out and do Infinity War. It feels like a cop out because it's coming up very, very soon. But Guardians 2.
Yeah.
Guardians, the more I think about it, and I actually have sat down and made a list because I'm a nerd.
Yeah.
Of my favorite Marvel movies, and Guardians is number one for me, and it's just fantastic. I think it's the best Star Wars movie since Return of the Jedi, and I'm including the most recent Star Wars movie in that.
I would definitely agree with that.
I think it's just fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. It grows for me more and more. I see it. I'm fascinated to see what James Gunn's going to do now he has a clear run. I'd be intrigued to see how much Nicole Perlman was a part of the success of the first movie, or was it mainly down to him, and just the confidence that they're showing, and Marvel are showing. They showed confidence, obviously, with the first Guardians, with the "You're welcome," poster and the trailer was amazing. But the fact is, I watched the trailer again when I was watching Doctor Strange for the third time. And
excellent.
The trailer for Guardians came up and it doesn't even have the name of the movie on the trailer.
Oh, wow, yeah.
That's how confident they are about this.
This is what I said on the pod when we were discussing it. And you were saying it's a bit, well, it doesn't tell you anything new. And it's, well, it doesn't
give you anything new.
It's the confidence of a movie that knows it's going to make $1 billion, whatever happens. It's just, they know that everyone, and they know that they can just evoke that feeling in people with that music and those characters just to go.
But Marvel, even just next year, we're getting a Spider-Man in high school movie.
Yeah.
Guardians 2.
Yeah.
And a Taika Waititi Thor movie.
That's my number two. That's my number two, because I genuinely, if it's a Taika Waititi movie, if he's managed to impose his style on Marvel and on the framework with that cast, it could be spectacular.
And the concern for me, Hulk stuff and,
well, that's a concern for me with Thor Ragnarok, because
it sounns like it's going to be like a road trip through the galaxy. Yeah, yeah.
Because it has Hulk, it has the existing framework of Cate Blanchett as Hela, and we have numerous different characters coming in there as well. Plus, you have, as we know now from the Doctor Strange post-credit sting.
Yeah, spoilers.
Yeah, we have certain revelations about
everyone's seen it.
Yeah, everyone's
seen it.
Yeah,
everyone's
but yeah,
apart from
Seb. So how they going to resolve that story?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's fascinating to me, but I wish I could sit here and say I'm really, really excited about
The Flash.
The Flash, but I'm not sure that's going to happen.
It's now on its looking for its third director.
Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah. It's very interesting, but yeah, it's a really obvious answer, but Guardians 2, I think that could be.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Could be something special.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Chris, for joining us. And,
thank you.
Yeah, listen to the Empire podcast.
And read
Chris's words. Oh. But you all do already.
So. Yes. Does anybody listen to this?
This is amazing.
We
should do this more often.
I'm Chris Carter. I'm a colorist for comic books. I'm an indie comic creator as well. And I'm a part-time admin, sort of lecturer type, university monkey type person.
And what wares are you hawking here at Thought Bubble?
Right, we have three titles that we're hawking. Shilling, if you will. We've got Loose Cannon, which is a sort of a sci-fi comedy in the vein of Red Dwarf, Guardians of the Galaxy, Hitchhiker's Guide, like that, but with more immature swearing.
For the benefit of, because this is an audio podcast, that's Loose Cannon spelled.
Yeah, Lou as in the name, and then Scannon as in the pun. Yeah, so that's all that. And then we've got Bruce Outback, which is Australia's greatest time-travelling detective, sent back through time to solve unsolved crimes with the help of his space-suited koala, as you do. And then we've got Druid Investigations, which is a modern-day Merlin fighting monsters with a motor insurance salesman.
And how can if people are listening to us, how can they get your comics? Because obviously they're not here at Thought Bubble, because Thought Bubble will have finished by the time.
Of course. And Thought Bubble doesn't go on that long.
No.
But all the books can be bought online from www.atticstudios.website.
Dot website.
Yeah. We couldn't afford the .com. Yeah. Cheaped out, man.
So, Chris, tell us a little bit about your favourite comic book movie.
Right, I say my favourite one of all time, comic book-wise, would have to be Scott Pilgrim.
Were you a fan of the comics before you saw the film?
I'd read a little bit of the first one, and that's about it. So I went into the film fairly fresh, and I still haven't yet completed the actual books. But
well, there's no excuse for that.
I know. I've seen the film now, it's fine.
Different ending.
I know.
Look, I finished Preacher.
I know I finished Preacher, but they haven't made a film of Preacher, have they?
Well, they made a TV show.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
not very good.
Yeah, deviated a little bit. But yeah, so yeah, the Scott Pilgrim is definitely. I just love the design of it, the pacing of it, the writing, the editing. It's just. It's one of those films where if I'm watching TV and it comes on, I will inevitably end up just watching the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think me and my wife have any kind of original dialogue. It's just quotes from Scott Pilgrim.
I actually watched it three times in a day.
Yeah. This is Dan, by the way.
would Edgar Wright or somebody else be your dream director for a Lou Scannon movie?
Oh, man. I would be down with Edgar Wright doing a Scannon film. I would be down with that.
I don't know who I'd have direct for it, but in my head, I always picture Eric Balfour as Lou Scannon.
Oh, amazing.
That would be good. We'd have to have Ron Perlman as well, wouldn't we?
Ron Perlman, yeah.
But yeah, no, I think, what's his face? The guy, is it James Gunn who did Guardians?
Yeah. James Gunn, yeah.
I think he'd be a good one.
He'd be good, but then he'd be like...
It'd be like Guardians. Let's get Brian De Palma, why not?
Martin Scorsese. Martin
Scorsese, yeah, no.
Martin Scorsese's Lou Scannon.
Yeah. Hell, I'd watch it.
I don't know if we ever got into this back when the podcast first started, but what got you interested in superhero movies then? So as a genre, what did you like about superhero movies that got you into them and then made you want to go and find out about the...
Spider-Man. It was Spider-Man. It was watching Spider-Man for the first time and loving that. Just from the first time I saw that poster. And like because they were characters that I knew about. You don't grow up not knowing who Spider-Man and Batman and the X-Men are because they were on TV in animated form. And like I had watched as a kid the Superman movies, or at least some of them, and the Batman movies throughout the 90s. I had some cultural awareness of all of that. And then so when I watched Spider-Man, and that's great. And like I said, when I've talked in the past about watching episodes of the X-Men cartoon where, you know, what happened to Wolverine? Where did he get his powers? Like, I always wanted to know that. It was something that was intriguing to me and I didn't know where to go to do it.
But what about the genre kind of appeals to you? Like, you know, if someone said to you, why do you like superheroes? So not even in the chronological sense of, because I loved Spider-Man first. Mm. In the same way as my answer would be because I loved Superman first. But then, you know, a different question is, what do you actually love about the genre, or what do you like about the genre? I don't know if love is too strong a word.
No, because
you know,
what
interests you?
I think I do, and I think you can probably tell through the podcast that I very much like some superhero movies. Some of them, I think, are really terrible, but they are something that I will always like. There isn't a superhero movie coming out that I'd be like, I don't really want to watch that. Apart from Power Rangers, which we're never doing on this podcast.
Well, I quibble about the definition of Power Rangers as superheroes anyway. They sort of are, but they're also from a completely different genre and tradition. So,
but I think particularly now and over the past few years when we've been doing this podcast, it's with the movies particularly, which is what started this. It is the just overwhelming accessibility of them. They're huge, big movies that are for everyone, or at least at their best are for everyone. You know, I could go and I don't know, speak to my like 6-year-old second cousin about what he thought of the last Spider-Man movie, for example, because he probably will have seen it. And I could go and speak to, you know, you guys and have an in-depth chat about how Batman was depicted in, or how they're handling the character of Batman in Gotham, for example. Or, you know, like my parents went to see Doctor Strange. These are movies that are big and culturally important and they're everywhere. And
I mean, we've talked before about, you know, the stuff that my parents like, and like my mum has never read a superhero comic knowingly in her life, but she enjoys most of the movies and most of the TV shows, and she actively loves some of them. She loves the Captain America movies. You know, I've said before, they watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Gotham. They even watch the crap ones. She likes that genre in live action, even though she would not touch it with a barge pole, you know, and prior to... I mean, I think it's the Christopher Nolan Batman movies that kickstarted her interest in it. Prior to those, I don't think she would have even been that bothered about the movies. It's just not a genre that she was interested in. But suddenly, I mean, I think kind of, I think there's more. I think superheroes can have a wider, and I think it's something we discuss on this podcast, can have a wider ranging appeal than people might think, because they can be such different things.
Yes. You know,
people have such a narrow definition of what they think a superhero story is. And I think something that you see through the movies, and that I think hopefully you've learned through the comics as well, is that superhero comics can be drastically different
from each other, even with the same characters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, you know, different writers and artists can take on exactly the same character, even in almost exactly the same status quo, and do something that is a completely different thematically, in terms of the story, in terms of the approach, everything.
I think it's more that, like, I've always been interested in more genre stuff. Like, I've always loved sci-fi. Like, when I was discovering, you know, movies that I loved, it was stuff like Blade Runner and 2001 were the movies that really got me excited. And I read a lot of Stephen King, and I was addicted to Lost and Battlestar Galactica when I was a teenager as well, and those kind of shows. So that's always the kind of stuff that kind of, you know, pushes my nerd buttons anyway. And so I don't think I've ever really felt like a massive affection for a particular hero. Like, I don't feel protective over how a certain hero is depicted. Like, even Spider-Man, like, I'm not reading the current run of Spider-Man in the comics. I tried it out. I like Spider-Man. I love that movie. I don't like the Amazing Spider-Man movies, but it's not like I'm like, oh, I'm so angry that you got this character wrong. I'm annoyed that you made a bad movie. Like, that's the issue I have. So, and I don't feel like I've really enjoyed some Superman, but I don't feel I have like the same emotional attachment to the character of Superman that a lot of people do. Like, even after reading All-Star Superman, which I thought was superb, it wasn't like I felt it made me feel a special way about Superman. I just really liked the telling of that comic. So, and I think that is, I said this on the podcast so many times, story is what attracts me. And I think that probably is another reason why exploring the comics behind the movies is fun, is because the movies can sometimes have a plot from the comics, which you can then go and explore all the beats. So when we see Planet Hulk in Thor Ragnarok, it's probably going to be like a scene. Mm. Whereas, you know, you can read this big grand saga in the comics. And so it's fun as something just to dig into on top of the movies.
My name's Kieran Gillen. I'm a writer. I'm hanging outside. I'm about to go and DJ, because that's the other thing I do. When I say DJ, I mean play records in sequence. So I've just discovered there's a magic button that allows you to mix, which is quite exciting.
Excellent.
And you've actually been, you were talking music at the concert.
Yeah, yeah, I'm like, about like 25% of my comics are about music, but people tend to think it's a much higher percentage.
Except we found out you have something else that you are interested in.
Well, you say like found out, he talks about it on like Instagram and stuff all the time.
It's not exactly Sherlock Holmes. Actually, that's the murder scene, that's the scene I want to write with Sherlock Holmes. It's like Sherlock and Watson burst into a room, in it there's a murderer, there's a guy who just stabs someone to death, blood everywhere, and Sherlock's like, I think we found the murderer. And then Hopkins goes, no shit, Sherlock. And that's, anyway.
You pitched as a movie before we've even asked you to pitch as a movie.
I have unique takes on everything.
Okay. Well, so we want basically your pitch for a Warhammer movie.
Okay, this is a concept in Warhammer, it's called Rogue Traders. War 40K is basically space fascist empire, and whatever. Rogue Traders are basically people that go around the galaxy trading and exploring and that kind of stuff. Nathan Winters Gehring. Opening scene. Landing a planet, they meet these lovely aliens, and then this very stern warrior lady comes and says, hello, pleasure to meet you. And like, then they even get a diplomatic meeting, they've just made first contact, everything's nice. There's a perfectly peaceful civilization, it's utopian, you know, you imagine the glass citadels go to the sky and little angel things are flying around and go right by. They go up to orbit, and he goes, what? You know, nuke it all from space. Exterminators now. And it's the Rogue Traders' mission to find new, strange, new civilizations and exterminate them. And basically, imagine Star Trek if they're all cunts. And basically, the entire travel of the universe as being genocidal fuckwits. Like, literally inverted Star Trek. And I would watch that.
Yeah. Have you ever pitched this as a comic?
Honestly, if I ever did a Warhammer comic, that's the opening scene.
Sounds amazing. Well, and then it sounds like an every scene.
It's 40K is a, one of the thing is, it's very dark Saturn. There's definitely an age of teenagerdom that doesn't quite get that. It's very stupid. But it's also very serious. That's the only point, you can do it with a straight face. But it's like, the major influence of 40K was actually Nemesis the Warlock. if you look at it, Memphis is walking really is just 40k. So that kind of like that hyperbolic parody of like Catholicism is the Empire. So you can imagine that Nemesis tone, that's kind of what 40k is.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds highly entertaining. That would work as a film. Or a TV series. I feel like you could do...
How would you want to see it as a film? Who would you have do it?
Oh, I'm really bad at casting.
to make it. Who could make it?
I'll tell you what.
Well, you're right.
Okay.
You're qualified to write. Yeah,
the lead is Eva Brown. My lead lady is always Eva Brown. Not Eva Brown, that's fucking Hitler's wife.
Yeah, I was
Eva Green.
Okay, right. That makes more sense. Yeah.
I'm not really good at names. Every time I say Eva Green, half the time I say Eva Brown. And that's
I thought you were going real... Real direct into the genocide there.
No, that's pretty bad. Anyway, Eva Green. It'd be directed by. Have you seen that interview by Snipes? You know when Snipes started showing around it after. Was it Batman vs. Superman? He's saying, yeah, I like skulls. and then oh yeah, he's got an axe. I kind of like axes. And the point is like, if I ever met him, dude. Do you know about Warhammer? Because if he doesn't know about Warhammer, I can imagine
just lean into all of your darkest
instincts. And like, where have you been all my life, beautiful? And it's like every single bad instinct, which I don't like his movies. Every single bad instinct he has makes him perfect for Warhammer. over the top, macho bullshit to the extreme, skulls everywhere, and it's like he would go, I need even more skulls than I would normally have.
That's the best Zack Snyder pitch I've ever heard. I never thought I'd hear a pitch which Zack Snyder is the director, and we're like, yeah, it sounds great.
Stylistically opulent, ludicrously violent, skulls everywhere. I'd watch it. I mean, it's a Warhammer movie, I'd watch it.
And with Eva Green, not Eva Brown.
Yes.
Hello, I'm Steve Lacey. I'm the host or co-host of The Fantasticast, a Fantastic Four podcast. And
what is The Fantasticast?
The Fantasticast is a podcast guide to The Fantastic Four from the beginning of the Marvel Age of Comics. We basically read through Fantastic Four issue by issue, as well as all the spin-off books and guest appearances. In the 5 years we've been doing it, we've made it from the 60s to midway through the 1970s with some wonderful comics. And some not so wonderful comics.
You see, this is always the way that I was told that it was borderline impossible to read comics, and you just have to accept that you can't read it all. But you've taken the opposite approach. You've just gone, we're going to do it. We're going to do every single one.
Every single one. And we have an end point, unlike all the other Marvel comics. Yes. We have a definite end point.
I feel like you might not by the time you catch up somehow. And would our listeners have known anyone that has appeared on your podcast, for example?
I'm struggling to think whilst Seb shoots daggers at me through his eyes. Seb and James have both appeared on the show.
The fact that I don't really like the Fantastic Four was not a handicap to my appearing on the show, although I imagine it may have been a handicap to the enjoyment of your regular listeners, who I imagine are all Fantastic Four fanatics. I would be like, who's this arsehole coming on telling us that he's never really liked the Fantastic Four?
So Seb joined us for the two-parter introducing the character of Adam Warlock, or as it was actually known, him. And in two issues he only actually managed to appear for about three panels. James joined us for an issue of Marvel 2-in-1. I'm struggling to remember which one it was. And one of your previous guest hosts, Al Kennedy, has joined us for a couple of issues as well over the past few years. So some familiar voices there.
And I'm going to have a brief cameo on your thought bubble, because we've been mutually podding this weekend.
We have indeed. I'm not quite sure what I'm doing with Joe's little contribution, and indeed everyone else's contribution, but it will be released at some point. And who knows what the future may hold for Joe and the Fantastic.
Oh yeah, I would be delighted. Delighted. But you're going to get a little bit of Fantastic Four into my life right now, because we've reached the point of this kind of thrown together thought bubble special where I ask for a comic book recommendation based on, I guess, the comic that you're here talking about on your stand, which is the Fantastic Four. So you're going to recommend me some Fantastic Four comics to read.
So I know you've read some very old Fantastic Four, Jack Kirby and Stan Lee stuff. I know you've read some more recent stuff from the Jonathan Hickman.
Yes.
I'm going for a little bit older than Jonathan Hickman. I'm going for some stuff from the early 2000s, and that's a run by one of the greatest comics writers there is, Mark Waid, with art by a fantastic artist called Mike Waringo. The two of them came onto the book and launched it with I can't remember how much it was, but I think it might have been 10 cents, but basically a deliberately cheap comic to get loads of people to pick it up. It's the highest selling Fantastic Four comic there is.
I owned a copy of that. I don't think I read beyond it, but I did read that reduced price one.
And they went to write the book for, I think, about 3 years or so. And they...
I think they really got what the Fantastic Four is about. They were able to pull in all the different threads. So you've got it being very much a family book. You've got it being about going out and exploring things and discovering things. It's a book where Reed is a scientist as well as being a family man. And there's plenty of villains, classic Fantastic Four villains showing up. But what really makes this book work is just that sense of the team as a family, and the best stories really play off that. There's an extended sequence where Doctor Doom is gunning for the Fantastic Four through the children, specifically their daughter Valeria, who in previous books has established Doom was involved in the birth of. He was effectively the midwife, shall we say. That's a very reductionist way of looking at it. But
that's a future explainer comic book concept, it sounds like.
But there's some really great stuff. Doctor Doom is properly defeated and deposed, and then the question is, what do you do with Latveria? And there's a storyline called Authoritative Action, which is the Fantastic Four occupy Latveria, effectively. It's a little bit of an analogy to the situation in Iraq at the time, but it really looks at the idea of how does the Marvel Universe work? International politics, you know, they don't exactly get away with marching to Latveria and taking it over. But there's some really personal stakes in it as well, and some very emotional stuff. And yeah, I think it's probably the most quintessential modern Fantastic Four there is. It's luckily collected only 4 volumes, which are fairly cheap to buy at the moment as well.
So years old. I guess it's a good idea to start with that really cheap issue and see how far I get.
Yeah, I think you'll get some really good superhero comics out of it, and a real sense of who the Fantastic Four are in a way that, say, the movies don't quite get across.
Well, we did have one series of movies where there is the same Sue Storm accidentally getting naked in public scene in both films.
Indeed. It's almost as if Tim Story had an obsession.
Right, well, thank you very much, Steve. They sound excellent. I'll look forward to reading those.
And where should people go if they want to listen to the Fantastic Cast?
If you want to dive into the Fantastic Cast and see what we're about, head to thefantasticcast.com, where you can find many, many episodes. Don't feel obligated to listen to all 200 or whatever there are, but dive in. I'm trying to remember, I believe Seb was on... No, I'm going to get the episode numbers wrong, so I'm not going to...
It was 70-something.
Yeah, 70-something.
76, maybe, something like that.
James was on in mid-2015. Yeah, just pick some episodes and go for it. We've done commentaries on 3 out of 4 movies as well, including the Roger Corman one, so if you want to veer towards the more cinematic side, you can find that.
We'll have to get that to that on the podcast as well at some point, so that'll be fun.
It will. Might be probably more fun than Fanfostic.
I'm Abigail Brady. I write comics
such as
Trans Realities, which is launching here today at trans superhero comic doing a story that you could only do with trans superhero.
And that is available. Will that be available post Thought Bubble? Can you write online from you afterwards?
You're not we haven't figured that out yet. You'll be able to write online on Comixology submit soonish, we hope, depending upon how long it may take to let us go away from the limbo. And we will be having a physical release in all good London local comic shops soon as well, hopefully.
Good plugging. So we would like to invite you to pitch to our rigorous pitching process, although Joe is not here to approve this because he's still in bed, but I have power to potentially greenlight something in his absence as Vice President of the Cinematic Universe Pitching Department. So would you like to pitch us what you think should be the next Marvel Netflix series?
I think it should be She-Hulk. So She-Hulk is currently, I think she's the largest, the most important Marvel character that they haven't really got any plans for, and no obvious place to exist in. Like, there's no Hulk movies that she can be a supporting character in. So, Netflix TV series seems ideal. She's a lawyer.
Yep.
You've got procedural element there that you can actually...
And it's already gone so well so far doing stories about lawyers in the Netflix.
Yeah, TV. Well, you there's a much stronger tradition of She-Hulk doing actual procedural lawyer stories than there ever was with Daredevil, for example. So you could actually...
And the added bonus of no Karen Page or Foggy.
Exactly. You get to basically create her supporting cast by picking who you like from her comics and from existing Netflix casts. The other thing that She-Hulk has that would fit in well with the Netflix series is a tenuous connection to the movies.
Yeah. would you play up the connection to Hulk or play it down?
I just have it in the background, like.
So you keep that as the part of her origin.
Yeah.
Have her be disconnected.
Yeah, but you don't need to necessarily like make it a big deal. You don't even need to really have her be his cousin. There's no like particularly strong reason, character reason for that.
Yeah.
She could just be a random person who gets a blood transfusion from Bruce Banner before it is determined that he shouldn't really be donating blood. What was that about anyway?
It's just a character.
And so do you have thoughts on who should make it or who should be in it? You've got to have a casting suggestion, surely.
So I've got no particular thoughts as to who should make it, whoever, I mean me, obviously.
Yeah.
That clearly I've got the pitch, I should make it, that's how these things work, right? But if you made me the showrunner of She-Hulk, we wouldn't call it She-Hulk, by the way. We'd just call it Jennifer Walters.
Okay, like Jessica Jones.
Yeah, exactly. We'd cast Gwendolyn Christie, who's the Brienne of Tarth in Game of Thrones, as Jen.
Okay, I could see that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, because the problem that you've got, though, with She-Hulk is that when she's Jen, she doesn't look like She-Hulk. So you've got to have someone who can transform.
I think you could do a lot with just Gwen, though. Okay. She glams up quite well. Like, maybe the size-changing thing wouldn't be such a big deal.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't necessarily think you'd want a split actor for that role anyway.
Yeah.
Like, because she's basically still the same person.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like she transforms into a monster. Like, she just becomes more herself.
I think, you know, I'm very much in favour of the idea of a She-Hulk TV series, because She-Hulk is awesome. Not only am I going to commission this, I'm going to commission it to replace Iron Fist immediately in the schedule.
Thank you, that's brilliant.
Get working on the script.
Okay, I'll see what I can do.
I'm Ryan North, the writer of The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl.
And I'm Erica Henderson, artist on The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl.
And so I've been very cheeky and I've come to your stand and asked you whether you could recommend me a comic book based on me really loving Squirrel Girl. So what would you recommend I go to next?
I would recommend Giant Days by John Allison.
That's great.
Yeah. It's about friendship and young ladies and crazy antics.
That's really good. That's fantastic, because I did actually yesterday pick up the first three issues of Giant Days. You're going to love it. Perfect. You're going
to
love it.
And also read his, like, 18 years of webcomics that lead up to Giant Days.
Okay. Around, Bobbins, they're all terrific.
Yeah.
Amazing. Would you say the same? Or do you?
Yeah, that was mine.
Oh, it was yours.
Aha!
So just a whole lot of John Allison in the
Giant Days. Yeah, John Allison's the greatest.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
What do you think, I want to get back to the sort of last couple of years, to new to comics, Joe. What do you think, or has there been anything that has sort of surprised you about comics, about the form, the culture, the stuff that you've dived right on into in the last couple of years that you might not have expected 2 years ago before you started? Really,
I don't know about not expected. I mean, it's certainly been eye opening, like hearing the frustrations of like comics fans like Seven James saying like, oh, these are things that you've just got to accept because comics. And then you start reading comics and you're like, oh, this like dangling plot thread has been left there, and this might be like an old comic that I've been reading, and go, then so when does that get resolved? Oh no, it doesn't. Or
there's a plot beat from 2006 Batman comics that are a cliffhanger, that just before it was before the Infinite Crisis and the 1 year later relaunch. One of the Batman titles ended on a gigantic cliffhanger involving the Joker, Jason Todd, and a bomb, and Batman. And literally that thread never got picked up. And now the universe has been rebooted three times since that happened. And it's just never going to be resolved. It's just one of those things.
But it's different hearing about it and then experiencing it. And like, so, oh, there's a big crossover event. What's going to happen to the character that I really like during this crossover event, whose comics really don't have anything to... No, their story is just going to stall for two issues while they deal with the stuff that I'm not interested in elsewhere. So those frustrations have been there. The thing that surprised me most was how much I enjoy going to the comic shop. Because that's part of it. I buy physical comics because I like going to... I like going to the comic shop once a week, if I can, and just like having a little browse, looking at just the covers of the comics that I'm not going to read, and going, "Ah, what's that?" Or And it's also fun because I get a lot of recommendations from Seven James that I can pick up from there as well, and then I'm digging around kind of the back stuff.
It's quite a vertically integrated hobby interest in a way, you know, because you have from the experience at the comic shop through to the obviously the comics themselves and the characters that you know and love, and you've got a history with the characters, plus you kind of got that, especially with you particularly, you've got an interaction with the news stuff, the online culture. It's not just that 22 page single issue. There's a lot else going on around having an interest in comics.
Yeah.
This weekend we're here at Thought Bubble, and you know, it's really fun, you know, meeting and seeing these people who have been writing these comics. I mean, in fact one of the comics that I've been reading in the past year that I've enjoyed the most is Squirrel Girl, which is just utterly fantastic, and I like will read an issue and then go like talk Laura's ear off about and they taught me binary code to count on my fingers using binary code. It's fantastic. And then Ryan North and Erica Henderson were there yesterday, and I got to buy the graphic novel and have that signed by them, and that was lovely.
Yeah.
Meeting people like as you'll probably have heard on the podcast, meeting people like Al Kennedy, who is someone who I've been now listening to his podcast for the last year and a half, 2 years, because we started doing this podcast and because he came on, and that's another person talking about comics, which is really fun. So if you hear me say something to Seb and James like, oh, and is that such and such, and they'll go, oh yeah, Joe's learning. Like if I haven't heard that from Seven James in the first place, I've probably heard it from House to Astonish or one of the other comic book podcasts. Like I listen to JMLs Explain the X-Men on and off as well, and so I get little bits of X-Men-y stuff when I dip into that as well. So yeah,
you've let this whole weird culture just envelop you, haven't you?
Yes, well, and following creators on Twitter and meeting people like Harry at the podcast this weekend, who like just listened to our podcast, and he's another comics fan, and we can just sit and talk about comicsy things. That's fun. That's fun.
It's one of the things that being in something like Thought Bubble shows you is that it is this kind of this shared subculture. Mm. And you know, comics as an industry and as a culture has a lot of problems. And you'll see, if you're a listener to this who knows about comics, you'll know about some of the stuff that goes on. If you follow us on Twitter, you'll see us referring to things and talking about it. And it's, you know, there are problems with people within the industry. There are problems with practices within the industry. There are a lot of people who are self-identified comics fans who are the kind of person that I would not want to have myself associated with in any way, shape or form. And I'm not just talking about Reese. There is an unpleasant side to some of comics fandom where there are just horrible, horrible people who, you know, I'm ashamed of the fact that they are a part of this same subculture. But it's nice to come to somewhere like Thought Bubble. And, you know, okay, we bumped into people who we know, and there's, you know, I know that in any given place at an event like Thought Bubble, there'll be somebody in the room who I vaguely know off the internet. Equally, there's hundreds and hundreds of people who I don't know who they are. Some of them are dressed up in costumes, some of them aren't. Some of them have probably never read the same comics that I have read in my entire life. Some of them probably like some of the same things I do. Some of them probably like exactly the same things that I do. But either way, we're all part of, just by virtue of the fact that we happen to consume a particular medium in a particular form, it automatically makes you a part of this shared subculture that I think is unlike any other subculture, because most of the subcultures are not based around the medium. They're based around the genre. And to an extent, comics are, because the majority of people who consider themselves comics fans would also, they're fans of the superhero genre. But that's not true of everybody. Mm. And it's nice to see a mingling of superhero comics culture and comics culture in general, because it's just, you know,
To almost bring this full circle, what's really interesting about that, and given that we are at Thought Bubble, I have found, and I still do think, that the comics, the culture around comics, it is a bit of a bubble. You've kind of got to get inside it. Like, you see this comics convention existing this weekend, and it feels like everyone here is completely in, but anyone that's slightly on the fringe is completely like, what is going on over there? And that kind of was, for me, the podcast was always a kind of like a little bit of a gateway into that. But also, I think, and a lot of our listeners, hopefully some of our listeners have done the same thing that I have, which is to kind of listen to these two guys who know a huge amount about comic books and walk me and then the listeners as well through getting into comics through liking the movies. But there might equally be a lot of people who listen to the podcast still just like the movies and aren't part of this culture at all. Like the stuff that you're talking about the like the controversies and the stuff that I now hear about on Twitter because I follow enough comicsy people. Before,
that's be completely oblivious to that.
It very, very rarely breaks through into the mainstream media and the mainstream conversation. And unless you're a comics person, you just don't hear about it. And I think as well, that's a completely fine approach to take. If you love the movies and you just like, I don't want to like the... I've not really got any interest in reading comics. That's fine as well. But I would say I found it hugely rewarding just because there's a world of storytelling and artistry out there that you can be just completely unaware of. But yeah, I think it's interesting that it is a bubble. And that it is something that I think you're either in or you're out of, but also a bubble
pulled you into it.
But it's also a bubble that once you have that gateway in, it is incredibly easy to just, you know, swim in it and enjoy everything that's in there.
And spend a lot of money.
Yeah,
comics aren't too expensive.
They are. Yes.
Just make them less expensive, please.
It's fine. I don't mind them being expensive at Thought Bubble when you're buying self-published things off people who are making a living, but. Marvel and DC and Image Comics are too expensive,
especially post Brexit.
Yeah. Well, that's the next podcast. We're doing a Brexit special next.
Yeah, so this is the last one. We're going political from now on. Who knows? By the time this podcast's out, Donald Trump might be president, and we're all living in the post-apocalyptic wasteland anyway.
But at least we're prepared for it because we've read lots of comics about it.
Okay, are we transferring back hosting duties to me? Do I become the host again?
We'll pass you the host conch. There it is.
And I guess if any listeners have any questions, kind of following up on this chat, that you know, maybe more questions for me about the comics, or questions for Seb and James and Reese about how to get into comics, how to enjoy comics more. You know, send us those on Twitter, email, all the usual ways that I normally say at the end of the podcast. But I'm not going to, because it's our 100th episode spectacular. Ooh. And I don't think that you want to hear that right now. So I guess we should probably end this with just a big thank you for everyone that has listened to this and has listened to us over the course of our 100 episodes. Some of just me insanely ranting into a microphone on my own, but a lot of us sat around our various tables hooking up over Skype and talking about a whole heap of very good and very bad movies. Mm.
And movies like Gambit that will never happen.
Thanks for listening, guys. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. I'll do a better bye than that. Yeah, please.
Goodbye.
I listen to that regularly still, to the point that Laura had to firmly veto it from the wedding playlist.